Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And we are back. Before the break, I was talking about a client had asked me, or we were talking about the S&P 500. The situation was we were looking at how his portfolio was doing, and he's in one of our more aggressive strategies, what we call our tactical portfolio. Some people call it trend following. What the purpose is to be very growth oriented with this strategy, but to also have to be nimble and to be able to move depending on what's happening. And so the purpose, of course, is to get as much performance as we can, but also, you know, take some risk off the table if that's appropriate. And year to date, this strategy is doing very well compared to the S&P 500. And so we were talking about that, and he goes, well, you know, you're lagging the S&P by about 0.5%. And so, and I said, well, yeah, isn't that great? And he says, well, you're behind. I said, yeah, but think about that comparison. And this is why I wanted to share it with you, because the S&P is used very often as a broad measure, because it's 500 companies, as a broad measure of the overall market's performance or the economy's performance, U.S. economy and domestically speaking for the market. So, but the thing to keep in mind when you measure against the S&P 500 or any other index is, first of all, you cannot invest directly in an index. You have to do it through a mutual fund or an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, or any of these index-type funds. And that's done by the fund manager saying, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to build a fund and I'm going to model it after the S&P 500. Well, if that's the case, what are they going to do then? They have to go and buy those 500 stocks and put them in that portfolio and then hold them and keep them in a proper composition or the proper percentages so that they are representative of that index. And so even if you do an index fund, there's going to be a cost differential between that and the actual index. So you might see, for example, Vanguard or one of the other no-load fund families has an index fund that is supposed to track an S&P or another index. Even with massive amounts of money like the Vanguard, their S&P 500 index still has like a 10 basis point, something like that, cost, 0.1%. It's not free. So even if you were comparing the Vanguard S&P 500 index versus the S&P 500 index itself, the S&P 500 index is always going to win because it doesn't have that fee. Now, if you compare that then to a portfolio that is being managed by a professional investment company like my firm, Holland Financial, that has expenses and all of that and charges a fee to the client and that is building that portfolio with a particular purpose. In the case of the one I was describing, this tactical portfolio, the purpose is to try to get gains and try to avoid risk where we can and look for opportunities. So, for example, Scott got into home builders in that portfolio a little early. When home builders started to look like they were going to come back up, Scott put a little bit of the money that's in that tactical portfolio into home builders to give what we call alpha, to give some additional returns without taking too much risk. Well, to do all that, we have to charge a fee, plus we have the funds themselves that we're using. Even an index or even an exchange-traded fund has cost. So now if we compare those fees, again, you have to net the fees out of the return and compare that return to the S&P 500. For us to only be lagging, for this example of this client I was working with, to only be lagging the S&P 500 that has no fees by 0.5% is really good. And the other major difference is the S&P 500 is one asset class. In the investment world, you know, asset classes would be cash, a large cap asset class, a small cap, growth, commodities, precious metals, real estate. All of these are asset classes, and a portfolio manager like our resident Scott Connor, CFA, takes those and combines those together in a way to still create the opportunity for the goal or the desired return and also the desired level of risk. So the other thing I pointed out to this client about that portfolio is you've got the S&P 500, which again is one asset class, just large cap blend is basically what it is. It's these 500 large companies, they fit a large category and they are blended between growth and value stocks. That is just one asset class compared to our portfolio that might have 10 or 12 different asset classes. So our portfolio, by its very construction, is going to be less risky because it's more diversified. Now, that doesn't mean it can't lose, but it's going to have much more diversification, and usually more diversified is less risk unless you're doing, you know, a portfolio of commodities and say, well, I've got 10 different commodities. That's not what I'm talking about. A mix of different asset classes, and that has very often been used by professional money managers. But so when we start talking about, for example, the S&P 500 being up 12.5% year to date, well, that's with no fees, and that particular style of investing is in favor. So when you compare, you have to consider fees and also consider the risk you are taking. All right, I'm going to take another quick break, and we come back. I want to talk about an interesting article. I'm hot and cold on sometimes the articles I see in the newspapers, like the USA Today or USA News, but USA News has a very good one I want to comment on, and when we come back, so stay tuned.
Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. Oh, one more thing before I get into this USA News article is, as I like to do, Yahoo had another survey. You know, speaking of the cliff, right? Everybody's got to talk about the cliff. If they had named it something else, it wouldn't be so interesting, right? I mean, the fiscal cliff. I mean, come on. But the poll for Yahoo Finance website visitors is, the markets have been whipsawed this past week by fiscal cliff talks in Washington. Who has it right? And of course, you know, he who frames a question wins, right? I mean, they frame the question. I'm like, no, you should have three or four more question or possible answers, but they don't call me to ask me. So the first one is, the first response to that question is, who's got it right? Washington, this is how deals get done and get made, so get over it. Only 20% of people agreed with that. Traders got it right. Traders say, just stop talking until the deal's done. That's another 27%. But what's funny is over 50% of people said, nobody's got it right. It's time to call Greece, isn't it? So anyway, just an interesting survey. Now, back to this article that I thought was interesting. Again, I'm often disappointed with writers at newspaper, or especially the big newspapers like the USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and the like. I've been a little disappointed with them at times because I say, you know, why is this journalist writing about financial stuff? You need to have a financial person write about it. But they actually did a good job. Congratulations to USA News. And the article is called The Seven Planning Steps for Middle Income Retirements. And here are a couple interesting things I saw that I just wanted to mention to you. And I've got some other things I want to get to in today's program. There was a survey done, and the survey said that out of the roughly 110 million middle-class households, only at most 2 million had received some sort of financial planning service. So somebody actually come in and met with somebody like me for financial planning. So that's less than 2%. And what's interesting is that there's a Society of Actuaries, and that doesn't sound like a group that would really be the ones that do financial planning, but they're the ones that, you know, actuaries figure out how long people are going to live. They work for insurance companies, and they figure out how the insurance companies build products and how they sell them and provide them to you, and how they need to price them, and how much premium they charge you for your homeowner's insurance to long-term care, or how they build the annuity, or how to charge you for life insurance. But the society apparently has gotten pretty involved with trying to help people figure out this whole retirement thing. And they did a survey, and this organization called the Society of Actuaries, one of the major findings is that individuals don't trust financial advisors or don't understand the value of financial advice and don't even have enough financial information or knowledge to seek and understand professional advice. Now, what jumps off the page to me is this is something I talked to Don Blanding about a couple of months ago when he was on the guest on the program. He was from the investorprotection.org and talking about, he had been written up in a column in Wall Street Journal where they talked about the same, or maybe it was USA Today, but talked about the same vacuum of information that people don't understand. And this is why I wrote the book, How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. go to my website and you can get information about that. I give out a free copy of that when I meet with people to help them with their planning. If they come in and meet with me and they take the time to come in and meet, I give them a free copy of that book. Or you can get it on Amazon and it costs $10, well worth the money you'll spend. But people don't understand, they don't trust, which actually I think that's a good thing. I think be skeptical. And I've got a story I'll tell you as an aside here that I had somebody come in recently to meet with me, and this person had been with an advisor, wasn't comfortable, didn't like them. That's the bottom line, and ended up changing to another advisor. The new advisor that they're working with, they're not sure if they're doing the right thing. They're kind of second guessing. And so I met with this person. I said, well, okay, let's take this really, really slow, step at a time. And I made sure I gave him a copy of the book that I mentioned to you. We need to make sure you don't have to keep jumping from advisor to advisor. Let's take this a step at a time and make sure you understand what you're trying to accomplish. So, you know, a lot of this about working with an advisor, just ask questions. You should not have to pay for a first appointment. You should understand how they're compensated very clearly. The person I'm talking about did not understand very well. Not their fault. It's because I think the financial person did a poor job of explaining how they're compensated. So you need to understand that. Ask for that in writing. And make sure you understand at what point you're going to be charged and how they're going to provide advice to you. And you know, ask questions. Don't be embarrassed. Ask questions. And if you don't know what questions to ask, I know. Get a copy of my book and it'll help you ask the right questions. Now, the other thing that was really interesting, and I know, Lisa, you want me to take a break, but before I go to the break, the other thing that was interesting is that a lot of times people, I mentioned the fee, but they also don't know how much latitude the advisor has. You need to ask an advisor how many options they have. Can they offer one product or multiple products? Do they work for the company whose products they're going to offer, or can they go to use anything they want? Now, I'll come back in just a second. I want to talk about the 7-step planning process that the Society of Actuaries recommended. And it's not that different than what I've talked about on the program before, my 5-step process I've talked about. So let me take a quick break, come back. I'll talk about them. It's very interesting how they break it out, but I think it'll help you see why if you are trying to figure out your retirement either in the future or you're already there and you want to make sure it works, you'll understand the things that you need to be looking for. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
We're back, and just real quick, I want to get to the rest of this article from USA News. So the Society of Actuaries says, step one, quantify your assets and net worth. What does that mean? Well, that means you figure out what you've got, and is it 401ks, IRAs, is it regular money, non-qualified, have you paid tax on it or not? And they say basically you take that, you divvy it up into different buckets or different categories, and you figure out when you're going to need to use or look at these different assets. Like, for example, if you've got an IRA or a 401k, you don't want to draw on that till you're 59 and a half. Otherwise, you'll pay a pre-59 and a half penalty of 10% on top of the ordinary income. So you might pay 25 or more percent tax on that. So that's obviously money you don't want to use. If you retired early, you want to make sure you use other monies first for part of your retirement. Now, the other thing they say to go to, number two, is to quantify your risk, which is really talking about insurance. Do you have proper insurances? Do you have disability, long-term care, life insurance? Step three, compare your expenditures that you're going to need to make against how much income you're going to have. So in other words, if you're going to have $3,000 between pension and Social Security and you need $4,000 to live, there's a $1,000 shortfall. You then need to figure out where you're going to get that $1,000 a month. And so you generally want to get that from low risk, low volatility, low chance of drawing money out and having to sell it when it's down, what I call dollar cost ravaging. So that's the next thing, is to fill that gap. Number four is to compare the amounts you need for retirement against your total assets. So in other words, if you've met, you've figured out that in order to have the income you need to have $300,000 and you've got $150,000, well, then you know you can't retire yet. You need to come up with the other $150,000. Or something's got to give, as they say, you've got to adjust the income that can be created by your portfolio. What you don't want to do is to have to be take on a lot of risk, basically gambling, trying to get enough money. And I've seen people do that, actually. And it's, I'm sure, very uncomfortable for them. But you don't want to say, well, I'll just roll the dice. I need 300. I've got 150. So I'll just be aggressive and hope it works out. We need to make some adjustments, both in terms of when you're going to retire or what kind of retirement lifestyle you'll have. And so they go on to have a couple other ones that I didn't feel were as important. But those are, and probably the most, number seven was keep your plan current, which of course, when I do plans, I tell people, and I heard this expression, I'll give credit where credit's due, from Tony Welch, who actually was how I got started in radio back in 2005. He had me come and do a little program on WROD when he was in running the station. But Tony Welch would say that plans are carved in jello, not carved in stone. And so I say that about my financial plans. And that's the way to look at a plan. You know, if you build a financial plan or you're developing a plan for retirement, you know, build a plan, but it does need to adjust. If I go back to the plan and adjust it, I've had clients that have sold homes, bought homes. Obviously, if a spouse dies, that's a major event, setting aside the emotional and personal aspect, which is very important. But looking at the impact on the finances, these are all major events, or helping out a child or inheriting money. All of those things, you go back to the plan and you adjust. You go back to the plan and say, okay, this was our plan. Now let me update it. These are always come back to the plan. And if you do that, you have a guideline or a place to start. And also look at that plan. When things are going south in the market, you say, well, I have a plan. And, you know, you make sure that you're on the right track. Okay, one last quick break, and I'll come back with a few other items that I think you'll be interested in.
Sometimes I know what I want to say, but just can't find the words.
Last week, I shouted at my grandson, and I'm not sure why.
I saw my daughter, but couldn't remember her name.
The sooner you recognize the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, the sooner you can do something about it. To learn more, go to alz.org/10signs. That's alz.org/10signs.
A couple things I want to make sure we get to. Back to some news, and then I've got, if I have time, one more story for you. The economy, kind of looking at last week, the economy grew at more than previous expected for the third quarter at an annualized rate of 2.7%, but the details suggest of the reports that the recovery is still weak, and consumer and business spending were below previous estimates. Well, if you don't have consumer and business spending, that's the biggest part of it. Of course, government spending is still significant. But that is a concern, and you know, we have to see what's going to play out here. A couple other things. We talked about the fiscal cliff earlier. The interesting thing about the fiscal cliff is caused a push for IPOs and other stock sales and mergers. Because sellers are afraid of a big tax hit on their investment gains if they wait until next year to do the deal. And the other thing is corporate bonds are being issued like crazy, where corporations are borrowing money and they're turning around and they're using that money to pay out big dividends to their shareholders. How funny is that? You know, usually when companies borrow money, it's to expand and to try to grow the company so that it'll be good for the shareholders down the road. Companies are borrowing money to give money to shareholders. Isn't that interesting? You know, usually you hear about corporations having a bunch of cash on their balance sheet, you know, like Apple having $70 billion in cash and saying, well, maybe we'll do a special dividend. And then speaking of Apple, their iPhone 5 has received permission from the Chinese regulators, meaning that the gadget will soon be released or could be released in the coming weeks in China. That's a pretty big deal, isn't it, Lisa?
A lot of potential users.
That's big. I mean, that's a lot of potential. And I didn't get a chance to look at what Apple stock was doing, but it's probably up on the news. I'll pull it up while I'm getting to a couple of other news items. All right. So that, well, actually, those are the ones I want to get to. Yeah, no, Apple was pretty much flat for Friday, $5.85 a share. Volume was lighter than normal. So maybe the news is still being digested. And I've got time for one more quick thing. Again, I'm meeting with people on a regular basis. And another story that stuck out I wanted to mention. You know, a lot of times wives will encourage, which I'm really glad to see, their husbands to come in. But a husband encouraged his wife to come in. She admitted she really didn't want to come in because she's kind of bluntly had her fill of advisors. She didn't really want to come in and talk with any advisor, not necessarily me. But the client, the husband has been listening to the radio program. And he said, you know, I wanted to come in and talk with you. And we talked, and his big concern is making sure her needs would be met. So kudos to that husband to make sure that if something should happen to her, she's got somebody to work with in terms of an advisor and has somebody that can guide her through the important decisions that need to be made. So do that if that's your situation. Do that anyway, even if it's not. It's a good idea to make sure that if something happens, your spouse will be taken care of. All right, we're out of time. Tune in next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.